Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Ukraine is taking a pounding. Another Russian drone and missile attack in Kyiv this hour. The mayor posting that a residential building is burning and that a truck is on fire in another part of the city. And this coming after last night's attack, Russia's largest since it started the war. No real commitment from President Trump on whether the U.S. will send Patriot anti-missile systems to Ukraine.
They would like it. They've asked for it. They're very rare indeed, you know, because a lot of systems have been sent to Ukraine. But they would like to. I know they made the request. We're going to have to take a look at it.
The search and rescue effort ongoing in the Texas flood zone, with the death toll rising to 120, 172 people still missing. An official telling ABC News that six Secret Service agents have been suspended for failures connected to last year's attempted assassination of then-candidate Donald Trump in western Pennsylvania, this 4 days shy of the anniversary of the July 13th shooting. This is ABC News. Ukrainian officials say Russia launched its largest assault on the country since the invasion started in 2022. More than 700 drones and missiles were launched at Ukraine.
The majority of them were targeting military and industrial sites in more rural areas in Ukraine, which is perhaps why we haven't had any reports of casualties at the moment. In particular, the western city of Lutsk appears to have faced particularly intense attacks overnight.
ABC's Patrick Rievel. In neighboring Poland, the military said the strikes prompted Polish and Allied aircraft to be scrambled. Samsung has unveiled its new phone lineup that includes a thinner Galaxy 7 Fold 7. The Korean company also announced an expanded partnership with Google to add more artificial intelligence to its phones. Red Bull Racing has fired longtime team principal Christian Horner. His 20-year tenure with the team included 8 Formula One driver titles. Reason was not given. Dave Packer, ABC News.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers sweep the Dodgers.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Jackson Chourios singled home the winning run in the 10th inning as the Brewers rallied to beat the Dodgers 3-2 to complete their first home sweep of the Dodgers in franchise history. Trevor McGill struck out Freddie Freeman and two other batters in order in the top of the 10th. He's been named to the All-Star game next week. The Brewers' William Contreras led off the bottom of the 10th with a fly to deep center off Kirby Yates that advanced the automatic runner Sal Frelick to third. Churio then singled through the left side of a drawn-in infield for his first career walk-off hit. The Dodgers have now lost 6 straight for the first time since April of 2019. They head to San Francisco to play the Giants. The Brewers get Thursday off and then open up a 3-game weekend series at home against the Washington Nationals. Quinn Priester will get the start against Mitchell Parker for Washington. Again, from American Family Field, the Brewers beat the Dodgers 3-2 in extra innings to complete a 3-game sweep of Los Angeles. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Despite mediocre reviews, Dinosaurs prevailed as box office champions over the 4th of July weekend. As expected, Jurassic franchise Rebirth, also known as Jurassic World Rebirth, was tops at the box office, pulling in $147 million domestically over the 5-day weekend and $318 million worldwide. The film stars Scarlett Johansson and Mahershala Ali and some pretty impressive CGI dinosaurs. Coming in second place was the Brad Pitt-driven F1, which brought in $26 million and saw a somewhat respectable drop-off of 54% from the week before. How to Train Your Dragon came in third place with about $10 million bucks in its fourth week of release. The family film is now at $224 million domestically, with well over a half a bill worldwide. Rounding out the top five were the Pixar film Elio with about 5 million Buku Dolores, and 28 years later came in fifth place with 4.6 million at the gate. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, slight storm chance, low, low 60s. For tomorrow, more humid, partly sunny, isolated storms, muggy highs in the low 80s. Near 80 Friday, scattered storms. Dry and pleasant as we look into the upcoming weekend. Right now it's 78 degrees.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Green Bay's own Frank Hermans into the studio to discuss his new show at the Meyer Theater. Then Madison film critic Rob Thomas joins the show to talk movies, TV, and Madison.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Hidney Cuff.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and I want to just say this episode is presented in partnership with the City of Minneapolis for Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, who hosts a monthly conversations on the second Wednesday of the month regarding happenings and impact of our Native communities in Minneapolis. We're grateful for this partnership and to keep up to date on topics that can better support our largest urban Indian population in the country. I'll pass things over to Minneapolis American Indian Community Specialist and guest host, Christine McDonald. Welcome. Ho-wa.
Hi, Robert. Thank you very much. Bonjour, Ogadaki, Gabawik, Nindijnikaz, Ajajak, Nindundem. I'm Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis, and I am your guest host tonight on Native Roots Radio for Minneapolis American Indian Relations. Today, we begin with a topic that impacts many families, especially in South Minneapolis community. I think a lot of people tend to forget or not realize how interrelated our community is with people who may have come here from another country. We have a lot of families that are intermarried with children. But we are going to learn today about immigration laws, policies, and detentions, how the City of Minneapolis is responding, and what people's rights and resources are. So joining us now to talk about that is Michelle Rivero from the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me to be on the program this evening.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Can you just briefly introduce yourself? Tell us a little about who you are.
Yes. So I am the daughter of immigrants to the United States from Colombia and Italy. I lived in Minnesota for the last 26 years. I was raised in New Orleans. I'm married. I'm the mother of a 14-year-old daughter. And I've worked for the City of Minneapolis for 7 years. I think today is actually my 7-year anniversary.
And that's about, that was when the office was created, right? You're the first.
That's correct. The Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs was created in 2018 during a different Trump administration. So,
yeah. Thank you. So can you tell us about the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs and what you do at the city? Is she paused or am I?
She's paused over there.
Okay.
She's frozen.
Frozen.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when maybe what she can do is leave and come back if she can hear us, and I'm going to remove her right now. And maybe, okay. Christine, maybe you can talk about a little bit about the history of what you're doing here. This is just amazing work that you've been doing on Native Roots Radio and all over our network for quite a while.
Yeah, so it started, I'm not even sure how many, maybe 5 to 7 years ago, the concept of having cultural media through the city of Minneapolis and specifically through my department, which is Neighborhood and Community Relations. So there's myself, who is the American Indian Community Specialist, and then we have others who serve other communities, Southeast Asian, East African, Latino, African American, and then we also now have the disability community. And we all have cultural radio programming. And so this has just been a great opportunity to introduce folks who do great work at the city of Minneapolis and how it impacts our community. And I see we've got Michelle back. And so we'll go right back into our question. And that was, can you tell us about what the Office of Immigrant Refugee Affairs does and the work that you do at the city?
Yeah, sorry I got cut off, everyone. So the office was established in 2018, and we work to welcome residents from around the world and foster a sense of belonging in the city of Minneapolis. We want to make sure that residents are able to access opportunities so as to achieve lives of safety, dignity, and opportunity in our city. We connect community to different resources. For example, we host a virtual immigration forum every 2 weeks on Thursday afternoons in partnership with the City of St. Paul Immigrant and Refugee Program. And the next one's actually tomorrow evening, to share information about immigration-related developments, to connect people to immigration legal service providers. And the forum has as a goal to make sure that the community is well-informed and has access to accurate, correct information about immigration topics and knows where to go for help. And this is a great collaborative space, too, where organizations that are working to help people find a sense of belonging in our city are able to hear from each other and learn from each other. In addition, the office works really hard to meet people in community. We want to meet people where they're at. That includes by hosting regular community hours on Lake Street in the heart of community. So our community hours are 3 days a week in the afternoons, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 777 East Lake Street. People can ask questions on topics like how to find free immigration legal services, English language classes, access to healthcare and education resources, entrepreneurial activity information about workers' rights, and more. We may not have the answer to the question, but we work and do our best to ensure that people are connected to the resources that can help them. People who staff the community hours, including myself, speak multiple languages, and we use LanguageLine for folks who may communicate in a language that we're not able to speak. On Wednesdays through July, we are hosting immigration legal service providers for short immigration. I'm thinking of the word in Spanish, which is talleres, so short information sessions on different topics, including know your rights, accessing U.S. citizenship, and more. And you can go on the OIRA website at OIRA Minneapolis. Just type that into any search engine, look at meetings and events, and you'll be able to see the calendar of events that includes our community hours as well as the Twin Cities Immigration Forum and more.
Beautiful. Thank you. And when we talk about the city of Minneapolis, what do we mean when we hear people talk about Minneapolis as a welcoming city?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. The city works to create a positive and inclusive environment where everyone can feel a sense of belonging, can feel a sense of trust in local government and confidence in contacting City of Minneapolis employees for services and opportunities without fear that an interaction with a city employee will result in immigration enforcement. We know that federal immigration authorities work within our city and state, and city officials, city employees can't prevent them from doing their job, including immigration enforcement. However, The city doesn't participate in immigration enforcement, and we do not ask community members about their immigration status. These commitments are embodied in a municipal law that's called the City's Separation Ordinance, which governs employee conduct in immigration matters. We want to make sure that people are aware of this city law, as this is one of the things, one of the very tangible ways in which Minneapolis is a welcoming city, and we want people to know their rights. For this reason, we're sharing information with community under the message, "All are welcome here." Beginning with postcards in multiple languages that take you to a website affirming the City of Minneapolis values of welcoming, equity, and inclusion, and communicates a message of welcome that's accessible in multiple languages. So if you visit the website, you'll also find information about the city separation ordinance and more information about rights that we all have regardless of our immigration status. Thank you.
Hey, Thank you. That's great. Hey, this is, we're going to be right back, and you're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio. Please stay with us. Ho-wa!
Thank you.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NACD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NACD.org.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The easy all-in-one plan includes personal support, coverage for medical, prescription drugs, and dental, plus many extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
Your heart beats for generations. Take care of it.
There's a lot that we can do to take care of ourselves. And so I think it's important to take the smaller steps and break it down into more manageable pieces, because the little steps leads to big changes.
Every beat of your heart tells a story of love, resilience, and hope. For Indigenous women, taking care of your heart means creating more moments with the ones you cherish. Let's protect that story. Learn more at hennepin.us/heart-beats.
Rudy Luther Toyota is the dealer you can trust. Go to RudyLutherToyota.com to browse their inventory of new and certified pre-owned vehicles. Style, performance, and reliability, you can find it all at Rudy Luther. With every new and certified pre-owned vehicle, you'll get a Luther Advance per gallon at the pump and get $6 Works car washes at Holiday Station stores. That's right, you can get a great vehicle and help stretch your budget even further. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, this episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. And here's our guest host, Christine McDonald. Ho-wa!
Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. Tonight, we are joined by Michelle Rivero, who is the director of our Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs, Bernina's. Very important information, especially these days. We're starting to see more people who are having interactions with ICE. I don't know how much more common this is going to be, but I know, like, even Native people being pulled over by ICE, questioned, detained. So a lot of this is important. I think it's only the beginning of sharing out Know Your Rights information in our community. So thank you for being with us tonight. We'll get right back into our conversation. How does the city respond to any incidents that involve immigration enforcement agencies?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked that question. And I know that the topic of immigration enforcement and information that city has become much more of interest, right, in light of the event that took place on June 3rd at Lake in Bloomington, which was a federal criminal situation. And I can share that MPD has reconfirmed not only its adherence to the city's separation ordinance, which, as I said, does include a provision that states that we will not participate in federal civil immigration enforcement, and that includes MPD. In addition to that, MPD has put on their social media and communicated in other ways reconfirmation of their responsibilities and their priorities that include responding to 911 calls from the public, responding to threats to life or property, ensuring public safety for protest, and ensuring access for emergency vehicles like ambulances and fire trucks. You can check out the MPD's Facebook page to see a social graphic that they have clearly delineating what they do and do not do, perimeter control or crowd control and immigration enforcement is clearly listed under as one of the things that they do not do. I know that there's another question there, and I'm not sure if I should like address it right away, but it relates to advance notice of raids or deportation.
Right. Right, that was the next. Does the city get any advance notice of any raids or mass deportation efforts?
Yep, so it's also important to be very clear that the city of Minneapolis does not receive information from the federal government about planned enforcement actions. There may be times where the Fed chooses to inform local jurisdictions for public safety reasons or to request assistance, but again, our city's separation ordinance prevents the Minneapolis Police Department or any city employee, for that matter, from participating in civil immigration enforcement. Additionally, the city is not able to verify federal enforcement actions that may be taking place in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm, thank you. Can you tell our audience about any new policies and laws that are related to immigration?
So there are a lot of federal developments that touch immigration, and today we're just going to scratch the surface of a couple. The city is committed to regularly sharing updates relating to immigration developments, and we invite people to join the Twin Cities Immigration Forum to get the most up-to-date information. Again, those meetings are every other Thursday. The next one is tomorrow, and we'll be addressing the new federal legislation as well as the birthright citizenship case out of the Supreme Court at tomorrow's Twin Cities Immigration Forum. One development, our city's committed to our separation ordinance, and we joined a federal lawsuit defending the ordinance. That lawsuit is called San Francisco v. Trump. And recently we won a preliminary injunction where a federal judge ordered that the government can't halt funding to the city of Minneapolis just because we have policies that limit the use of local resources. Another topic is birthright citizenship. The Supreme Court issued a preliminary order. Birthright citizenship is the principle that people born in the United States are automatically citizens. This has been challenged by executive order issued by the president in January. The Supreme Court's decision agreed with the position of the administration only with regard to nationwide injunctions. So not on the whole topic of birthright citizenship, but on whether a federal court could issue an injunction that has nationwide impacts for everyone. And the Supreme Court said that that goes beyond their authority. So there's more to come on that topic, and really invite people to stay tuned, including with the Twin Cities Immigration Forum, to learn more.
Great.
I don't know if there's time for more.
yes,
there is. Okay, so also wanted to share that the travel ban went into effect on June 9th by presidential proclamation. If folks are concerned that they themselves or a family member may be impacted by the travel ban, the best thing to do is to contact an immigration legal service provider. OIRA also has fact sheets on that topic in case folks are interested in getting a copy of a fact sheet at our community hours. Additionally, the federal government is working to increase their deportation numbers. That includes a change in procedure in immigration court. If you know somebody, if you're friends with somebody, if you love somebody who has immigration court proceedings, it's so, so important to connect with a legal service provider. And we have plenty of free legal services in the city of Minneapolis so that people are prepared before they walk into immigration court. And I think the last thing I want to say, if there's time, is while in the city of Minneapolis, we have a separation ordinance, right, that governs our conduct, that's not universally the case across the state of Minnesota. There's some communities in Minnesota that have signed on to agreements called 287G agreements, which are collaborations between federal immigration enforcement authorities and local law enforcement. So it's important for people to recognize that if you're outstate Minnesota, to be aware of whether a 287G agreement exists, and that's easy to find on the ICE website. If you go to Immigration and Customs Enforcement and you type in 287G, you'll see a map and a list of all the communities across the nation that have those types of relationships. And so people can be more aware that it's important to be careful that immigration enforcement may be more likely in those places.
Okay, thank you. What are people's rights if they have an immigration enforcement encounter with ICE?
So during any encounter with immigration enforcement, it's very important to remain calm, first of all, and to keep in mind, yes, I do have rights. Some things that are important to remember: never lie about your immigration status, never provide false documents, know that you have the right to remain silent and that you have your rights in your own home. Practice standing up for your rights with a friend, a family member, or a partner. The city has a Know Your Rights web page where you can watch videos, read a lot more detailed information about your rights and how to stand up for your rights. Another thing to keep in mind is if a person was born outside the United States, it is very useful to have proof that you're authorized to be in the United States. So whether it is a receipt notice for an application, or another type of document showing your permanent resident card, showing proof that you, having proof that you have immigration status, is more important now than ever.
I actually had a family member who was stopped by ICE. I think it was just yesterday in Minneapolis. And so one of the things, even before that, we've been telling in our community is to carry your tribal ID.
Definitely.
So then our next question is, you also said you would talk about resources. What resources do you want people to know about?
So first, I want people to know that there are free legal services in the city of Minneapolis. The city partners with a number of excellent nonprofit legal service organizations that host community hours in locations across the city. One organization has been Minnesota Legal Aid, another is Volunteer Lawyers Network. If people are interested in learning more, kind of navigating through the different legal resources, feel free to stop by again, Career Force at 777 East Lake Street. We can walk you through the different organizations and you can identify the one that might be most convenient for you. Host community hours where they offer a free consultation with an immigration attorney. You can bring in your documentation and have an orientation on your rights. It doesn't hurt to do that. It's confidential. The information is that you share is confidential because you're sharing it with an attorney. And it's very important to replace fear with knowledge, right? Understanding what your circumstances are and how you can get assistance. Also want people to know about, again, our community hours, as well as the Twin Cities Immigration Forum, which is a space that anyone can join and learn more about the beautiful ecosystem that we have in the Twin Cities area to support people who are trying to find a sense of belonging in our city and contribute to refugee welcoming infrastructure in the cities and the state of Minnesota.
And can you talk quickly about why people should consult with a lawyer now and the benefits of attaining more secure immigration status, including citizenship?
Yeah, so it's clear that this administration is focused on removing as many people as possible from this country. I mean, it's been stated so many times now that this is a priority. It is a priority to deport people, to restrict people who have, you know, how can I say this, to terminate different types of immigration status. And so given this reality, it's more important than ever for people to access accurate.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Ukraine is taking a pounding. Another Russian drone and missile attack in Kyiv this hour. The mayor posting that a residential building is burning and that a truck is on fire in another part of the city. And this coming after last night's attack, Russia's largest since it started the war. No real commitment from President Trump on whether the U.S. will send Patriot anti-missile systems to Ukraine.
They would like it. They've asked for it. They're very rare indeed, you know, because a lot of systems have been sent to Ukraine. But they would like to. I know they made the request. We're going to have to take a look at it.
The search and rescue effort ongoing in the Texas flood zone, with the death toll rising to 120, 172 people still missing. An official telling ABC News that six Secret Service agents have been suspended for failures connected to last year's attempted assassination of then-candidate Donald Trump in western Pennsylvania, this 4 days shy of the anniversary of the July 13th shooting. This is ABC News.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
The Brewers sweep the Dodgers.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Jackson Chourios singled home the winning run in the 10th inning as the Brewers rallied to beat the Dodgers 3-2 to complete their first home sweep of the Dodgers in franchise history. Trevor McGill struck out Freddie Freeman and two other batters in order in the top of the 10th. He's been named to the All-Star game next week. The Brewers' William Contreras led off the bottom of the 10th with a fly to deep center off Kirby Yates that advanced the automatic runner Sal Frelick to third. Churio then singled through the left side of a drawn-in infield for his first career walk-off hit. The Dodgers have now lost six straight for the first time since April of 2019. They head to San Francisco to play the Giants. The Brewers get Thursday off and then open up a three-game weekend series at home against the Washington Nationals. Quinn Priester will get the start against Mitchell Parker for Washington. Again, from American Family Field, the Brewers beat the Dodgers 3-2 in extra innings to complete a three-game sweep of Los Angeles. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Actor Mark Ruffalo has taken shots at podcaster Joe Rogan, insinuating that Rogan is late to the game with his ICE raid outrage. The Kenosha-born Ruffalo said it's a little late now to pretend like Project 2025 didn't exist and wasn't the playbook all along, saying about Rogan, you are either not that smart or not that dumb. It's hard to tell at this point. Ruffalo has a host of projects set to drop in the coming months, and despite a solid performance as always, is still probably trying to forget he was part of Mickey 17. AMC Theaters recently announced they would play more commercials before movies to help offset a budget deficit. That's probably not something most moviegoers wanted to hear, but in a move in the other direction, beginning July 8th, the movie chain will offer 50% off tickets on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. The chain has also announced they will offer discount popcorn and soda on those days. This will allow the movie-going public to save a few bucks while still trying to add a few extra pounds. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, slight storm chance, low 60s. For tomorrow, more humid, partly sunny, isolated storms, muggy highs in the low 80s. Near 80 Friday, scattered storms. Dry and pleasant as we look into the upcoming weekend. Right now it's 76.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Years ago, I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, you sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time for the Northern Wisconsin State Fair. Pat Kreitlow is along. We'll also talk to Rusty Volk, the fair director, and Eric Anderson of the U.S. Coupe Championship.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, this episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. And here is our guest host, Christine McDonald. Yay!
Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And before we jump into our next guest's conversation, I want to mention that we are at the City of Minneapolis going to recognize the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And we invite the public to join us on July 30th to honor 35 years of the Americans with Disabilities Act. You can share your story, watch a documentary and panel, and see the Disability Pride flag unveiling. Signed into law July 26, 1990, the ADA is a critical civil rights law for people with disabilities. This law bans discrimination in all aspects of public life. This includes discrimination in city programs, services, and buildings. This anniversary celebration will honor the importance of this law and the local leaders who have improved countless lives in and around the city. The city recognizes the important role of the ADA in making life more accessible for people in Minneapolis. So again, that's the ADA 35th anniversary on Wednesday, July 30th, and that'll be at the Public Service Building in Room 100. And if you want more information, you can find it on the city's website, and you can just search the ADA 35. And our next guest is Ruth Talford from the Minneapolis Health Department, and she's here to talk about how to prepare for emergencies. Whether they are man-made emergencies or they're natural disasters, it's important to be ready. And our first question, can you tell us about yourself, a little bit of your background, and then tell us what you do for the city?
Sure. Hello, my name is Ruth Bijou, Ruth Indigenous, huh? Ruth Imachiyapi Kishto. I grew up in a dairy farm with a huge family in western Wisconsin, land of southern Anishinaabemowin Ojibwe. I currently live with my life partner, Abby, and three dogs in Oakdale, land of the Wahpetukute. Sorry, I struggle with Lakota. Wahpetukute, Lakota. But I've worked my entire 20-year career here in Minnesota, helping people prepare for and recover from disasters of all kinds. And occasionally I've had the privilege to work with local tribal leaders from Red Lake to Mille Lacs to Mulawakatun Sioux. As of this year, I am the volunteer and partnerships coordinator for the Emergency Preparedness Unit of the Minneapolis Health Department. Basically, that means that I help individual volunteers and community partners participate in the city's work of preparing for and responding to community-wide emergencies.
Thank you. Great job. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So why is it important to make an emergency preparedness plan?
Sure. Making an emergency preparedness plan is so important because it helps you and your family stay calm and know how to keep yourselves safe in a dangerous situation. Kind of as mentioned in the previous segment, if you know what to do, you're less likely to be afraid and more likely to react calmly and appropriately. And also, especially when there is a large disaster or some community-wide emergency, it's going to take a while for outside help to come to help you. So generally, experts say that you should be prepared to take care of yourself and your household for up to 72 hours on your own. Also, planning for emergencies helps you figure out what your specific family members will need and help you gather necessary resources so that you can take care of your family.
Yeah, that's really important. What kinds of things should people plan for?
Here in Minneapolis, the main threats that we encourage people to prepare for are house fires, which I know don't get a lot of attention, but they're really the most common type of disaster we face. There are about 5,000 home fires in Minnesota every year. And last year that claimed, I believe, 46 lives. So it is a very real threat. Then we have extreme weather, and we all know we're seeing more and more of that. And that can look like tornadoes or severe storms that can happen very fast and cause a lot of damage. And it's important for everyone to know where to go to be safe. Extreme cold, which I know a lot of people think, oh, we'll just bundle up. But especially if you're traveling or if you have issues keeping your home warm in cold weather, extreme heat. Of course, we've been seeing some dangerous high temperatures and humidity for longer periods here in Minnesota. So that can be very hard on the body, and it's important to know how to stay safe for that. And then power outages, which can have an overlapping effect with extreme weather, but power outages can last a long time, and they can really hinder your family's ability to cope with an emergency. So again, thinking about what you need to do to keep your family safe, how to keep food supplies safe, how to keep your home warm or cool, knowing what to do with medications or medical equipment that relies on electricity. And then last but not least, of course, thinking of COVID or even the seasonal flu, it's important to also plan for and prepare for infectious diseases in the community.
Just quickly, like one of the things that I bought was one of those, it's like a solar chargeable it's like this combo piece. It's like a transistor, it's a radio, but it's got a crank as well. So it can charge up my phone, and it has a flashlight. So thinking about those types of things, it was really like kind of cheap, but on, easy.
Yeah, because remember, your cell phone battery is going to die really fast. You can't charge it.
So what kinds of things should people have in an emergency plan?
One of the main things is a family communication plan. And there's a bunch of resources to direct you on how to do that, but know how to find each other, how to relay, we're okay, don't worry about us, our phone's dying or whatever. And then also a safe place to go in case you have to evacuate the home suddenly. And also planning for a financial backup. Do you have insurance that's appropriate for your needs? And do you have the information to shut down your accounts if you've lost your wallet in a fire or something? So those are kind of some of the three things, a safe place to go, how to communicate, and what's your financial resource access.
I remember when the bridge collapsed, I was getting calls from across the country, and people were worried because they couldn't get through. I said that even if we can't use our phones here, it's not even necessarily that we had a power outage. It was that was a major national news, and just filled up all the phone lines.
And a quick tip on that, just because I was saying I went through that as well, is phone calls take up so much bandwidth. So if you're ever in that situation, sending a text is a lot more effective way to get through when the lines are overwhelmed. And again, if you can designate someone like, hey, Aunt Sheila, please tell the rest of the family we're okay and stop calling right now. That's another way to kind of, again, have that plan in place. Remember those tips so that you're not struggling and causing anxiety with your family.
Yeah. Thank you. I remember hearing that part about having a contact outside of your area that can communicate with other family members and friends. That was stuck in my head, but I forgot it until you said that. So should people make some kind of kit?
Kits are great to have. Generally, just think of the basic things you might need for those 72 hours, especially if you can't go outside or if you've got to grab a kit to go to stay somewhere temporary. Think about medications, some water and non-perishable food, maybe a first aid kit, something to keep your kids occupied if they're going to get bored fast. an extra phone charger, you know, maybe a sturdy pair of shoes or something like that. What do your pets need? So again, think about what your family might need in a quick get out quick or we're stuck in here situation, and make sure it's somewhere you can easily access to keep fresh, up to date, and again, readily grab and go when that emergency happens.
I remember I went down a rabbit hole one time on emergency preparedness stuff. And one of the things that stuck out to me was, you know, if you're packing like food that you can eat right out of the can, you got to remember, how are you going to open that can?
Yes. Yes. So preferably the pull open ones, yeah. Or at least, yeah, have a can.
And that even makes me think about if emergency, like if the electricity goes out, you know, at home and you're able to stay at home, a lot of people have that electric can opener, and that's not going to work if the electricity is out. So.
Yep. And just going at it with a knife, more likely you're going to hurt yourself, and then you've got another emergency. So do it safely, get a manual can opener.
Yes. Right. Are there resources available to help people?
Yes, there are a lot of great resources. Some of the main ones I like to promote are ready.gov. Very straightforward. They have great checklists and guidance. The American Red Cross has a really good interactive mobile app that can help you think through what you need to do, what you can do with your family. There's a website called doonething.com that is great because it can, again, help you set individualized goals. What does your family need? What are the different steps to take? And also help you set individualized reminders so that you can get emails like, hey, check the batteries in your smoke alarm or something. So it's a great interactive website. And then also, of course, if you look for emergency preparedness on the city website, you'll see a bunch of links to these tools there too.
I think people like tend to forget that we've had some major things happen in the city here that I've been around for. And it was like the tornado on the north side. We had this false sense of security that tornadoes don't happen in urban areas, and they absolutely do. And it was devastating. The city, it took a long time to recover from that. And then people need to be made aware of looking afterwards, looking out for people who are scamming. Being able to identify who real people were by badges, work trucks, those types of things. Thank you. We're going to go into a break and then we'll be back.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Your heart beats for generations.
Your heart is so many things. It beats all the time, and it works very hard to keep you moving through your day, keeping your thoughts clear. It's the most important organ in your body.
Every beat of your heart tells a story of love, resilience, and hope. Taking care of your heart means creating more moments with the ones you cherish. Learn more at hennepin.us/heart-beats. That's hennepin.us/heart-beats.
Rudy Luther Toyota has a great way for you to purchase your next vehicle. It's the Toyota Smart Path. You can shop at the dealership or on your couch. Shop smart, and remember, they'll have the best prices and no surprises. You can browse the available vehicles, use the Smart Path payment estimator to customize your own payments, apply for financing, and then finalize your purchase. Smart Path is the smartest path to your door.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NAGDI. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NAGDI.org.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. This episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. And here is our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. I am Christine McDonald, the American Indian Community Specialist with the City, and your guest host this evening. Joining us today is Ruth Talford, who is with the Emergency Preparedness Division of the Minneapolis Health Department. And we're talking about different reasons you should be prepared for any emergencies, whether they're man-made or natural disasters. And we've certainly had a few of those things happen here in more recent years. You think about things like the tornado on the north side of Minneapolis, or you think about the bridge collapse and how that collapse had an impact across the city. And I can also think of like some pretty big fires that we've had recently where we've had community members who did get displaced. And like you mentioned, that's not always necessarily thought of as a big disaster, but it is definitely for the people that are experiencing that. Welcome back, Ruth. And what role does the city and the health department have in an emergency?
Well, when an emergency is happening, one of the biggest things is to identify a situation is going on and warn people. So we'll talk a little bit more about how you receive those alerts, but making sure people are aware whether it's an infectious disease outbreak or a tornado bearing down on us. And then another bit is assessing how this emergency has impacted the community and coordinating with various helping agencies to render aid, whether that being setting up a place where people can come to receive some food and water, or making sure that vaccines are available, that sort of thing. Fortunately, as you point out, we have had some big emergencies, but they don't happen every day. So I'll also add that a big part of what we do when there isn't an active emergency is we work to try to help people prepare. Again, the more people are ready for something like this, the less severe the impact is going to be on themselves. And then we also work with community leaders and organizations, because we want to make sure that if this helping agency that makes sure, you know, Meals on Wheels, that they're able to keep delivering the meals that community members are relying on. So helping them establish plans, making sure that they are in the loop for communicating. Like when there's extreme heat, we often work with, agencies that serve the unhoused populations, and like, okay, how do we make sure the word gets out? Does someone need some extra water or cooling cloths or whatever? You know, so there's a little bit of making sure we have those relationships, plans, trainings, and tools also within our organization, so that we are ready to respond quickly when the emergency happens.
Mm-hmm. And planning is so important in having those relationships in place. I think back to I know that the city has relationships in the American Indian community with agencies like the Division of Indian Works, looking forward to creating a stronger relationship with the center. I know that they're also part of the Resiliency Hub network as well.
Yeah.
But that fluidity in relationship is important. I think back to after the murder of George Floyd and the devastation that happened in our communities, and how quickly different communities came together to provide support to our neighbors. And I know, like, for my community, it wasn't the Indian Center or the Division of Indian Work. Not that they didn't want to, but I think it was just like a natural evolution of people that came together off of Franklin Avenue, more so out of like Powell Grounds and the Native American Community Development Institute. So having those existing relationships and being able to connect as it flowed and as it moved, you know, so just we've seen and we know that as a government that we are able to adjust, and we know community is always there to help each other. So that was a beautiful thing to see in the midst of that devastation.
Absolutely.
So how should people stay informed about emergency situations?
All right. Thank you for asking. So the city of Minneapolis uses Smart 911. We use this system to send out alerts for anything from snow emergencies to severe weather, public safety incidents or infrastructure issues. So it's a great thing for all Minneapolis residents to have. You can simply text MPLS alerts. So Minneapolis alerts to 77295. If you text MPLS alerts to 77295, that's a great way to get the link right to your phone, and you can set up a quick profile. You can set it so that you receive texts, emails, push notifications on the app, or even receive phone calls when the big bad is happening. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you weren't able to write that down, you can just simply go to the City of Minneapolis website. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll see the Contact Us section. And there's right there is a sign up for news and alerts. Mm-hmm. So that's where you can start the process, again, for Smart 911. There are other apps and whatnot out there, but that's specifically for Minneapolis. That's the best way. There are otherwise, you know, if you want to sign up from alerts directly from NOAA and others, there's a lot of apps out there now.
I don't know if you can answer this question, but because you said NOAA, the National
Oceanic Atmosphere. I can't remember the whole thing. I'm sorry, but yes, the weather people.
Yeah. I think my question is more about, do we know, are there alerts still coming from those folks?
There are. So I know that's been a big hot topic in the news because they've had staffing cuts and funding shortages, and even things like they used to have a contract to automatically translate into Spanish. And that contract was canceled because we only speak America here, you know, apparently. America being English. Anyway, but point being, yes, there are some limitations, but they are still a major resource.
Okay, good.
So that also, their information does feed into emergency management partners. Again, the city is still here, still invested. So we will communicate, you know, what we can for our broader Minnesota and beyond audiences. You know, just check with your local government for, you know, what they use. Mm-hmm. And yes, you can still sign up for alerts from the national systems. They are doing the best they can with their limited resources. Yeah. Doesn't hurt to have overlap, I guess.
Yeah. And then, so is there anything else that you want to share before?
Just one other quick thing is we do also have an emergency preparedness e-newsletter. So if you're looking for some tips to kind of, what are things that we want to be aware of, or what are some resources hopping up in the community? Same place where you go to sign up for Smart 911. You can sign up for our newsletter. It comes out once a month via email. And either way, I know we talked about a lot of things and this can be overwhelming.
That was great. No, it was great.
But, just remember taking little steps, any step you can take can help get you more prepared. Make a plan, make a kit, stay informed, and you'll be okay. We'll get through this. If you want to learn more, please reach out to us. You can go to our website and there's links right there. And I know we're just about out of time here. So
I want to thank you. I mean, that was a lot of.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, we'll talk to Sandra Goldshine of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy about the real harm that's going to be done to families under this new federal budget.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Another Russian strike on Ukraine. 6 people injured in Kyiv. On this early Thursday morning there, the mayor posting that a residential building is burning in Ukraine's capital and that a truck is on fire in another part of the city. In a post, President Trump giving a sense of how much different countries are going to pay when tariffs start on August 1st. 30% on Sri Lanka, 50% tariffs on Brazil. The death toll from the Texas flooding rising in the last hour to 120, 172 people still missing.
Recovery teams in Kerrville are scouring riverbeds for a sixth day. At least 170 people still unaccounted for after that catastrophic July 4th flash flood killed at least 119 people. And just 20 miles downriver from here in Comfort, Texas, they have sirens and test them every day at noon.
ABC's Matt Gutman. The limb of a large oak tree came down on possibly 9 children in the Malibu, California area. They appear to be having a birthday-type party. One person with critical injuries. This is ABC News.